This is the Stamfords podcast at the Stamfords Travel Writers Festival at Destinations in Olympia.
It's gone 4 o'clock here at the Stamfords Travel Writing Festival. Please welcome Andrew Wilson.
There's a muted applause if ever I heard one. I'm not the person you thought I was. Hello, my name is Andrew Wilson. I've known today's interviewee for the best part of 10 years, so I'd like to think that I was invited as much for my expertise on the subject as I was for my availability at very short notice. I should also point out that I am today's interviewee's agent, but of course I'm professionally obliged to be completely impartial in my interrogation of him. So without further ado, please welcome to the stage wildlife presenter, marine biologist, conservationist, and possibly the world's greatest living human being, it's the Blowfish!
Hello, sir. I love the way you tell everyone I'm his agent. Just say you're holding the leash, man. Say you've got the taser. If you need to shock me, just shock me. It's fine.
Sit down.
Yes, sir.
Very short leash. So, obviously, I am your agent, so there's no need to tell me that you're just one unfortunate slip on a frozen doorstep by David Attenborough away from being considered Britain's favourite wildlife presenter. But for those who don't know, who is the Blowfish?
6'2" and 7... Hello. Oh, that's him there. Look at him. There's a bit of an echo on that. He's from Yorkshire as well. What's going on?
Oh, there's technical problems. I don't need a mic. Hi, guys. Work with animals, children, or blowfish ever. Good?
Hello? 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 Check it. 1, 2, 1, 2.
There we go.
Okay, we're back on it. Hello. I'm the Blowfish, the world's only heavy metal marine biologist. And, from Yorkshire. Scuba diver. I like my heavy metal. I love my fish. I'm that kind of guy.
Excellent. And you've just... Fishing Impossible Series 1, for those who don't know, was shown on ITV last year. And it was so successful, they... commissioned a second series from you, which you've just returned from. So this time last week, where were you and what were you doing?
This time last week, I was in Iceland. We were feeding soap to a geyser, and I was having my mohawk shaved after a very dodgy bet.
Can you give us any inclination of what the bet might have been that you lost?
No, but at the time it happened, I was knee-deep in tepid water wearing a lot of latex.
Okay. So I asked, obviously I know the Blowfish quite well, so I asked my wife, what sort of questions, Paxman-esque questions, should I be interrogating the Blowfish with to give an idea to people who may not know who he is? And the best she could come up with was, what's your favourite fish? So... What is your favourite fish?
It has to be the great white shark. It's got to. It's just amazing.
Is that technically a fish?
Yes. I mean, it's obviously it's cartilaginous fish as opposed to a bony fish.
Say that word again for those who didn't write it down quick enough the first time.
Cartilaginous. Can't spell it, mind, but there's definitely a K in it. It's got to be.
And so give us a brief outline of what Fishing Impossible was at the TV show.
Fishing Impossible is three mates, although we're not really that friendly with each other anymore, hence no mohawk. And it's the kind of fishing trip, you know, you would do with your mates if you were down the pub and someone had a really good idea and far too much budget. That's kind of it. So we're not very professional, we're not particularly practical, and we're certainly not very very good looking. Well, Charlie isn't too bad, but It's the kind of fishing trip any of you could go on, just in some really, really mad and random places. So that's kind of what Fishing Impossible is.
So you're a marine biologist and a conservationist. Where does fishing sit in that?
That's a really good question, and one that I'm constantly asking myself as we're doing these things. There is no benefit being a conservationist, and it doesn't matter what, in my opinion, you're trying to conserve. We have to understand that humans are here, and all or nothing isn't going to work. Now, the seas are amazing. They've got an unbelievable ability to, you know, regenerate themselves, and they can provide us with so much food. If we do it right, it works for everyone. And that's where fishing can be. Because some people can do it for pleasure and throw the fish back, fantastic. Some scientists can do it because they want to tag fish and return them and we can learn more. Or you can have commercial fishing vessels fishing in the right way to ensure that there's fish on your plate, but there's still fish in the sea. So as a conservationist, to stand there and say, you shall not fish, doesn't work. To say, you shall fish and you shall fish well, that's the money right there.
And so I think we've got an example of the kind of the conservation element of the show that we're going to show. Just want to explain, so this is you in the Caribbean going underwater with some sharks and some lionfish. Do you want to explain a little bit of the background of this?
The bottom line is that lionfish live all the way over there, somewhere on that map, somewhere behind that canoe. And they've managed to get all the way over to there, which is the West Indies, the Caribbean, and they have no natural predators. Lionfish are very venomous fish, don't want to get stung by it. But they're also a mouth with fins. They eat more than I do. And once they got established in the Caribbean, they started to smash everything. And so the reefs and the fish populations there are crashing. So we came up with quite an interesting idea, which hopefully, if the clip is what I hope it is, it'll show in the clip.
Let's roll VT.
Spot, Jules.
We're in the capital, Nassau. Jules and I are going to start by testing a theory of mine which would allow nature to solve the problem by itself. In the Indian Ocean, lionfish are kept in check by sharks. But here in the Caribbean, even these voracious apex predators don't recognise them as food. So, if the local sharks won't go after the lionfish, I'm going to dive down and take the lionfish to them. Shark conservationist Liz Parkinson is going to make sure I don't become lunch in the process.
The sharks that we have here are a super healthy population of Caribbean reef sharks. We're in their environment, so we do have to respect that.
What's today? The biggest shark we'll see in these waters?
Today, the biggest shark you'll see is a female Caribbean reef shark about 10 to 12 feet.
10 to 12 feet? Oh, Jules, mate, you've got to come and check this out, dude.
Look at that. Man. They're not a bad size either, are they?
No, there's some pretty big ones down there.
These sharks will bite, so Liz and I will be wearing chainmail suits. They should be strong enough to stop a shark's teeth from cutting through to my flesh.
Just like putting on a pair of pants.
Okay.
But there's one small issue.
Is that a bit of a problem? I'm just thinking the hole coming through, a bit of a problem, maybe.
It's going to be fine.
In the groin area.
That's the groin area right there.
So this is the thrill zone and this is the kill zone.
After almost no deliberation, Jules volunteers to man the radio.
Looking good, mate.
Yeah?
Yeah. Not sure about the crotch area.
You don't think this will be next season's style, do you?
No.
The crotchless chainmail pants.
No.
We've got some lionfish to offer the sharks, but will they take them?
My theory to all of this, okay, is if we can get sharks preferentially choosing lionfish as a prey source, we can save this whole region.
With a quick modification to the helmet, I'm ready to go.
Stay alive. Right there! Oh my God!
Shark, right there!
I've dived with sharks before, but never experienced anything like this. There are sharks swarming around us straight away, all big enough to do some serious damage.
We've got the Caribbean reef sharks, and we've got some nurse sharks too, some baby nurse sharks.
This is incredible! There are sharks everywhere! They are so close, man! They are flying right by me!
Fifteen meters down on the sea floor, I'm ready to tempt these sharks with a tasty bit of lionfish.
We need these guys to step up to the plate and start helping us with this lionfish problem that we have down here.
But someone swims past you and you just get a flick of the tail or a brush of the fin, you just get this idea of the immense power.
Suddenly, this chainmail suit doesn't feel quite so reassuring.
If they really wanted to, they could turn us into... Well, they might think what they might turn us into.
The question is, will they take a lionfish?
So you want to take the lionfish?
Yes, mate. That was a lionfish.
Oh, brilliant. Absolutely brilliant.
Right, we're going for round two. Oh, I even got a little nip on my hand for a good measure there. Nice and slow. Oh, coming in over the shoulder. Oh, it's a shark loving.
You stick to the shark, David.
Oh, hey, yo, wait. Calm down, girls. Just got one right in the head there. Oh, and a nurse shark just had that one.
Watch them nurses, they're vicious, mate.
This is a success here, Jules.
One of my initial worries was that the venomous spines might cause the sharks problems.
But it doesn't seem to be harming the sharks at all.
Hammerhead sharks that feed on stingrays, of course, the sting on a stingray is pretty, pretty bad, but there have been hammerheads caught with up to 20 or 30 stings still lodged in their mouth. So perhaps sharks have some natural immunity to the venom, or maybe they're just so hard they just don't care. That's not bad.
Amazing. That
little
was amazing.
Mini high five underwater.
Wow, good clip. So have you single-handedly solved the lionfish crisis in the Caribbean?
Honestly, no. But we brought a huge amount of awareness to it, because the people that live in the Caribbean, so many of them rely on fish and the lobster hatcheries for their food. They have no idea what lionfish are doing. They just don't realize what they're doing. They just notice that there are fewer lobsters and more lionfish. And when we were out there getting people interested in it and getting them paying attention to what's going on, we got them realizing that lionfish is an option. They can catch it, they can eat it, and you only need a small change like that can make a big difference.
So just give us a sense of being in that moment, being surrounded by some very hungry sharks. What did you feel like in that moment?
I'm not too fussed, because I've dived with sharks before. I've dived with sharks a lot, so I'm not usually too fussed. But the one thing that gets you is the immense power of the animal. That's what gets you. A shark will come by, so you have a 10-foot shark coming by here. And you don't think, oh, it's something going to turn around and bite me. But it gets to there, and it just wags its tail like that. And you get hit in the head like you've just been kicked. And the power that they have in their bodies, forget their jaws, that's what strikes you the most. Like, there was one when the shark came up here and was right here in front of my face. It got underneath my suit between me and the box. And it starts thrashing around, and you're getting your head caved in by it without it even bothering to bite you.
So obviously the show is about fishing, and you go to... Just make us feel a little bit jealous by telling us some of the places that it took you.
So we have been to the Bahamas, Canada, Kenya, South Africa, Laos, Thailand, Scotland, Norway, Nepal, Indonesia, Komodo, Chile, Patagonia, Peru, Zambia, Mozambique, Iceland, and Cornwall.
So I imagine that many people probably haven't thought of fishing as a means of going to amazing places. So just give us a sense of, as well as making a brilliant TV show and a very reasonably priced book that is available at the stand over there after this talk, what else fishing could do as a conduit to creating travel experiences?
When we went out to most of these places, we didn't just go out there and chance our hand. We were after specific fish. We had limited time to do it. We went out with guides and experts who knew where to go and get these fish. And they're not on the tourist path. You're not finding the best fish down the end of the street next to the hotel. You're going out into the middle of nowhere to find these fish. And the guides that took us of, you know, that it's all about the journey for them. Yeah, okay, you can stick a fishing rod over the side and fish. Great, fantastic. But you're travelling into just the most untouched areas because that's where all the good fish are. That's where the big, decent fish are. So, like for Nepal, for example, in Series 2, we spent 4 days rafting down a river away from everyone and everything, seeing, you know, Asian rhinos, you know, looking at tiger tracks. Yeah, we did a bit of fishing. But we were in the middle of nowhere. And the guys that run that as a fishing trip. So I think there's a lot of exploration out there, a lot of expeditions and travel that just because they might have the word fishing in the title, people might not have even thought about them. But really, you can fish 9 to 5 or you can fish for 5 minutes and take in these most amazing, unique, out there locations that are untouched, because if they're untouched, it's good fishing.
Obviously, marine conservation is really important to the sustainability of the planet. What were the experiences that you had that even shocked you?
When you start getting towards Southeast Asia, it starts getting a bit terrifying. When we were in the Mekong, you know, this is the river that birthed ichthyology, the study of fish. And we're in the Mekong, which should have giant catfish, stingrays, all this kind of stuff, and it doesn't. It's just got this really sick, grotesque, like, knitting of hooks across the whole river. It's like some sort of twisted Christmas decorations. Just all these hooks just across the river everywhere, and it's barren. It's empty. When we were in Thailand, a lot of the fish are, you know, caught. They're speared, and maybe they're speared dead, but sometimes they're just speared, wounded, and then thrown onto a plate of ice, still gilling, slowly dying in a market. And there's not one, there's 50, 60, 70, and they're small, and we wouldn't catch them, we would chuck them back. So things like that are really difficult, because it's very easy for me to stand here and say, you shall not do that, that is bad. I might be saying it to someone who maybe earns $1 a month, and that fish feeds his family, and that's the problem. You know, their people aren't doing it because they're evil, because they want, you know, want to cause that kind of, you know, problem. That's the state we've got to. It's only education that is going to sort of bring that back.
So were there any places, obviously you have preconceptions, I'm sure, of a lot of the places that you went to. Was there anywhere that particularly surprised you that it wasn't how you expected it to be?
Peru. Peru was one of the hardest trips we did by a very, very, very long shout. Not just because of what we were doing, which was incredibly dangerous, and, you know, just Peru. Everything about it. It took ages to get everywhere. Because rather than going to Peru and then going to the north, where, you know, you've got Machu Picchu and Lima and all that kind of stuff, we went down into Peru, down into the fishing lands of Peru. And it's a huge exporter of fish, but it is a third world country. And that was just hard. Every day was hard. And when we went to do our final challenge, I mean, anyone that's seen the show or reads the book will know that Jay, one of my mates, is an ex-Royal Marine. You know you're in his terms, the hurt locker, when the ex-Royal Marine has literally lashed himself to a part of the boat, legs and arms, and is saying, take me back to Cornwall. You know, that's the kind of stage you're in, so that was a real test.
And so the people, obviously, that you mentioned, there are parts of the world that you went to where fishing is incredibly important to the local economy and also to the culture and their way of life. How much are they aware of marine conservation and also the changing nature of the seas and the tides around them?
In sort of Southeast Asia, you've not got a lot of that, but the areas that do understand that something needs to be changed are making big changes. And you've got a lot of people who are poacher turned gamekeeper, people that were cyanide fishermen who are now planting reefs. But for example, say you go into Canada or Iceland even, where they are just so hot on their fishing and their fisheries. You want to travel to Iceland and fish, any fishing gear you bring has to be sterilized. They sterilize it. There's certain catch limits, very strict catch limits. The same for Canada. We nearly, when we were in Canada, we were nearly not allowed to fish in the rivers we planned to fish for because there hadn't been enough rain. So they just said, no, we're not doing it. So, you know, it's amazing when people get it right, first world or third world, when they get it right, the difference is huge.
So let's find out a little bit more about the blowfish himself. Despite my wife's best efforts, I've chosen not to ask any of her questions. So where did your passion for marine biology initially come from?
I like probably many others, was inspired slash terrified by a certain film by a certain Steven Spielberg about a certain giant shark. Mm. And tricked by a next door neighbour who said, "No, you know, I'm 7 or 8. Come in, you know, we've got Crocodile Dundee." Mm-hmm. "Oh, Crocodile Dundee." Oh. It wasn't Paul Hogan. Mm-hmm. No, yeah. Sir. It was a shark with eyes like a doll, and it's scary, very scary. But it was so scary, I couldn't put it down. I couldn't stop it. I was so interested in sharks. I wanted to know more about them because they terrified me. And from there, it just went and it kept going. And then I remember it being a very young age thinking, hang on, you know, why are we fishing for whales? And hang on, you know, already, you know, shark populations were dropping. This is quite at a young age. I mean, marine conservation and marine science now are quite popular and everyone's talking about them, which is great. But it's just my calling. That's not much of an answer, really, but it's just my calling.
And so you chose to become a science communicator as opposed to a marine biologist. What was the reasoning behind that?
The money. It came down to my own belief in myself. I'm dyslexic, so writing is very difficult. So the writing I've done in that book and any other writing that I do is very hard. And I was going to be one of those guys. I was going to do my BSc, and I was going to do my Masters, and I was going to do my PhD, and I was going to be a professor, and I was going to be everything to everyone. But it was just so hard. And I thought, hang on, my writing is terrible, and anything I write is going to be read by people who already know the problem. And I thought, but I do have a pretty loud mouth, and I can turn a phrase if I need to, because it's not the guys or the girls working in science at the top level that make the difference. It's that fisherman, it's that, you know, it's someone here, you know, you next time you go to Marks and Spencer's or Tesco's, buying a different cut of fish, because, you know, I'm not going to have that tuna, I'm going to have that farmed salmon instead. That is what saves the planet, not telling some scientist in a dusty room what he already knows. So that was my change. I thought, I'll go and speak to the common people, because they're the ones that can make the difference.
So apart from being a science communicator, because obviously you've got that bit, that niche sorted, we don't need any more marine biologists being TV presenters. But obviously, on your travels, you met lots and lots of marine biologists doing amazing things around the world. What were the ones that you're particularly envious of?
The girls at the South African Shark Conservatory, they were just magic. And the lady in charge called Meg, I fell in love with her. I really did. They were just super shark girls. They were just amazing. Live, breathe, eat shark. And I
eat
don't know.
Shark?
Well, sorry. Yeah, good. No, fair point, actually. Yeah. It's just one of those things. I suppose it's like when train spotters get together, or where, you know, you could take, you know, a Tottenham Hotspur fan from London and a Tottenham Hotspur fan from, I don't know, Peru, and you can get them together and they will fall in love. And it's the same thing with sharks. But those guys are every day, they're out in the sharks doing proper decent hands-on science in an area where sharks in South Africa, well, it's one and the same. So they, I was so jealous of them. I could have definitely stayed with those guys.
Well, we saw in the clip earlier that we were using sharks to hopefully control the lionfish population. When you went to South Africa, it was the shark population that was an issue. Personally, I can take or leave a shark, I'll be honest. Why should we care that the shark survives?
Sharks are the guardians of this planet. That's the bottom line. You do the maths on that map. You know, there is way more water than there is land. And that water is responsible for making 2/3 of the oxygen that we breathe. Mm. Sharks were banging around in that sea before trees. So before trees or flowers even bothered to grow on the land, we had sharks. Now, you don't need to be a genius to know that if you're playing Jenga and you remove the brick at the bottom, the whole thing's going to come over. Without sharks giving us control over, well, sharks providing control over fish populations, without sharks there visible as a sign of healthy fish populations, the oceans are only going one way. And if they go, we go with them.
So for anyone there who wants to be a marine biologist, what advice would you give to someone?
Don't get into heavy metal marine biology. It's already pretty full area. Anyone that wants to be a marine biologist, go and see the world, go and travel, go and find out all these different places. You know, there's a lot going on, obviously, in the hot areas. People like diving in nice hot seas, and that's all well and good. but some of the stuff up in the cold will blow your mind. I've seen better things in freezing cold water than I have in the warm tropical stuff. I'll tell you that for free. Just get out there and get involved. Whether it's hermit crabs down Portland Bill or basking sharks or whale sharks or whatever, if you can make a small difference, that's all you need to do.
So of all the places that you, the amazing places you've been as part of the TV show and the book, what would be your highlight?
The probably at the end of series one, when we were in Norway, and I got to fulfil two amazing things. One, I got to catch something with my hands, and two, I got to do a dive under the Arctic ice. That was amazing, big time.
Well, as if we'd planned it, we happen to have that clip. So do you want to give us a little bit of background of what you're doing here?
So we're in Norway. What's happening in Norway is that there are, as the temperatures are changing, there are crabs, nice, tasty, delicious king crabs, moving over from Russia, moving down into Norway. But as they go, they're just like vacuum cleaners. They will eat everything. So we were going out there to catch the king crab, show people that even though you've got to chisel in under the ice, it's worth it. It's a good thing to catch, and you're getting a tasty meal, and you're saving the environment. So it's a double whammy.
Let's have a look.
Daybreak, and today we're planning a dive through a hole in the Arctic ice cap to catch a king crab. We've come to the northernmost point of our Norwegian travels, just 10 kilometres from the Russian border and 400 kilometres north of the Arctic Circle. It doesn't get much more extreme than this. Underneath our feet is sea. We're actually walking on the frozen Arctic Ocean. I'm going to be going under this ice sheet to catch a king crab, and the enormity of what I'm about to do is beginning to sink in. Around the world, hunting for this 6-foot crustacean claims the life of one commercial fisherman a week during the high season.
You're like digging your own grave.
What sort of comment's that?
Come on, get on with it.
So shall I start drilling here?
Our dive supervisor is former Special Forces expert Paul Haynes. He knows that one slip-up could be fatal on a dive like this.
And extract.
Oh, it's nearly out.
Yes, yeah. Mate! Yes.
Look at that!
We're through. It looks cold down there.
Oh, my God.
Seawater freezes at -2, so this water won't be much warmer.
Let's get going then, come on.
Just chopping up chunks of ice.
As we work to make our blowfish-sized hole, I'm aware that this will be my only point of escape from under the ice.
It's really deep, the ice. Look how deep that is.
Charlie, you do realise your hand in literally a few minutes now
will be frozen. Yeah, absolutely.
As a safety precaution, we're making it triangular. The straight sides will make it easier for me to escape in an emergency.
That's a very dark hole there, mate.
Yeah. I don't think you get me going down there.
Everything's got to be right in this extreme environment. I'll be diving wearing a dry suit and need to avoid contact with this freezing water as much as possible. But even with all this specialist gear, I'm going to lose body heat fast.
Oh, come on, then.
I'll have a maximum of 15 minutes in the water to get down to the bottom and catch a giant crab.
I bet you've never pulled in a 20-stone blowfish before.
No. Hopefully I won't have to today.
Crunch time fish.
Boy time now.
This is it, mate, yeah?
All right, buddy. Okay, mask in.
Whoa, that's chilling.
Even in a dry suit developed for extreme temperature dives, people often lose the ability to think rationally through the shock of the cold, and that can be fatal.
OK, good to go, all right? You happy to dive?
Let's give it a go.
Yeah.
Good luck, buddy. We'll see you in a bit, OK?
This is it.
Go on, mate.
OK, buddy, in you go. When you're ready...
The freezing cold takes my breath away. But after a few seconds, I start to get my bearings.
Fingers crossed for a king crab.
I know, mate.
Surface, this is Blowfish, can you hear me?
Yeah, copy fish, how's it looking down there, bro?
All good here, guys. It's really weird. It's absolutely black with a white ceiling above.
My plan now is to descend slowly and scour the sea floor for a king crab.
I feel really disorientated.
I'm not surprised. It must be weird down there.
How you feeling, Fish? You all right, bro?
My ear is giving me some serious chip. When your ear starts giving you trouble, plays on your mind. Now isn't the time for me to be having second thoughts about what I'm doing.
As long as you're safe and as long as you're happy, crack on.
Just when I think I can't handle the pain anymore, I spot what I'm looking for. An enormous king crab. I've now got to catch this monster, avoiding those terrifying claws.
Honestly, wait till you see this, Jay.
I'm coming up, boys. And guess what? I'm bringing dinner.
Yes, Fish. It's going to cut the tether line.
Whoa, the tether line.
Whoa, Fish. Yeah. Wow. Yes. Look at the size of it.
Wow. Look
at
that.
Put up a hell of a fight.
Yes.
Oh, what a crab.
Whoa. Yes, Fish. Yes,
wow, mate. All the way, mate. That's a big thing.
That's your monster from
the depth,
mate. Look at that.
That is what we've come to Norway for. Mate, I'm proud of you, bro. That was awesome.
Yeah. I went down the blowfish and have come back Blowfisk, Viking of the North.
Oh, no.
Oh, it's so cheesy. It's so cheesy.
So can you put into words how cold that felt when you hit the water for the first time?
Not without swearing, no. No, it is. It's just, the water under the ice is as cold as it possibly can be without freezing. So your computer reads 1 degree. So your dive computer says it's 1 degree because it's not freezing. And seawater freezes like between minus three and minus five, give or take. But it's super cooled. So anything that it can touch that isn't seawater is freezing. So, it's just mad. I mean, the ice was... I had water inside my mask that shock froze when it touched the water and stuff. And you can feel the air in your regulator. Just, it feels like you're sucking it clean out of a freezer. It's horrendous. It is that cold. It is that damn cold.
But it was worth it.
Yeah, you saw the crab. That's winner, that is.
Did it taste nice?
Unreal. Absolutely unreal. Beautiful crab. Very tasty.
Not quite the same as at Portland Bill, I assume. suddenly, swimming with sharks isn't looking quite so bad, as far as I'm concerned, but you think that doing that was better than swimming in the Caribbean?
Oh, yeah, swimming with sharks is easy. Do that, whatever. That is scary. That is scary, because I thought, oh, I'll go in through the ice and... it was a nice bright day for what sunlight there was. And I thought, oh, this is easy. Chill out. No problems. Clear away. But, you know, be under there and it'll be a bit... No. You go in and it is pitch black. You are literally in the triangle of light and you can see nothing below you. You can't see anything in front of your face. You are in the light. So you just have to go out into the darkness and you can just see nothing. And I thought, oh, well, it's all right. Once I've... Because the problem is if you lose the hole, you can't come back up. You're dead. So, you know, we had all the dive safety and if I lost the hole, what I had to do and stuff. But I thought, oh, it's only over there, it's fine. But you go off and you're looking and searching, you get the crab, and you think, oh, brilliant, well, the hole's just behind me. And it's not there. And you can't see it. and you're suddenly in this completely black space with a giant, you know, 4.5-5 foot crab in your hands that's not pleased, really, to put it mildly. And, you know, what? All I know is up. So, I mean, that was scary. I had to pull on my line. I pulled on my line so that Charlie knew I was there, and Charlie pulled it so it went taut. And I literally looked at it and went, right, there's my line. I need to follow that. But, oh, no, if you get it wrong under there, you're dead. You're just dead. Whereas sharks, sharks are easy. No problems. Easy peasy.
What I loved about the series and the book as well is that for someone who isn't particularly into marine biology or into fishing, it gives you a window onto the world that you, in a way that you don't necessarily look at every day. And the experiences that you had, and also to understand how fundamental our seas and rivers and the marine life that lives in them is to our survival and also the survival of the planet. It's just a really interesting, funny, entertaining way into that world. Is that how it felt to you when you were making it?
Oh, yeah, absolutely. I mean, we were doing, obviously, we're doing fishing at times, but there isn't, throughout the whole of Series 1 and the whole of Series 2, you won't ever have one moment where somebody says, okay, this is how you tie this special knot on. We just don't do it. Mm-hmm. It's like, right, we're fishing. What are we fishing with? Rods. Right, we're doing what we're fishing with. We're fishing with a bike off the side of a boat, or we're going under the ice. Because it's the journey. It's the journey there. I mean, it's called Fishing Impossible. People might call it a fishing show, but it's not. It is a travel show. It is a travel show. It's just that our travel isn't to get to the top of Mount Everest and take a photo. Our travel is to, you know, get onto the Arctic ice and catch a crab, or travel down a river in Nepal and catch a golden marcia. So, you know, it is, first and foremost, is a travel show. And the nice thing about doing the book was we got to talk more about where we were and what we were doing and why we were there. Because obviously when you're watching it, it's a lot of chat between us, and really, frankly, we're very dry and we're not that interesting. You know, much better on page rather than on the screen. So there's a lot of chat between us, whereas that is much more of the journey we went on, both physically and emotionally, to get to where we were going and why.
And so, obviously, we may not necessarily all get the chance to go to some of the places that you went to and experience some of those things, but I think we all agree that marine conservation is really important. What are the practical things that we can do to help the planet one little bit?
Plastic. Recycle your plastic. Think about your plastic. There is a lump of plastic in the Pacific Ocean the same size as the state of Texas. Plastic. Plastic, 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 plastic. I think there are going to be... I read something the other day. There's going to be more plastic in the ocean than fish by 2050. I mean, it's just mad. Plastic only turned up in the 1970s. More plastic in the ocean than fish by 2050. It just doesn't make any sense. And you think about all the single-use plastics like that. Single-use plastic. But recycle it, you can use it again. That plastic. Choose your fish well is one thing, but if you can recycle and cut down your plastic use, you can make an enormous change.
And if we were going to stay on Britain's shores but see something amazing, what should we go and see?
You want to learn how to dive and just get under the water. 10 metres or 40 metres, some of the seas around the UK are amazing. And some of the places that you dive from are amazing too. I mean, we're up here in London. There's a lot of dive centres nearby that sadly are things like muddy quarries, that kind of thing. But if you can get yourself out, you know, get yourself out down towards Cornwall, Devon, South Wales, you know, Anglesey, Scotland, there are dives that are capable for, you know, the most novice of diver that will just blow your mind. And you can see everything from tiny sea squirts to seals to cloak anemones on hermit crabs to even the basking shark, second largest fish in the ocean, lives in our waters. You can go and see it.
Well, hopefully there's some questions from the audience, but I'll save that for when they come and chat to you over on your stand afterwards. All I'd like to say is that I think what you do in terms of educating and enthusing people about marine biology and wildlife generally is really amazing. And so thank you very much to Blowfish.
Thank you. Cheers. Thanks, guys. Top dollar.
Thank you very much. And as Andrew said, the conversation continues over on the signings at Stanford stand, where the Blowfish will be there signing copies of Fishing...